G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode number 20 of Irk to the Dory Room. This is a podcast that is a part of Channel Irk that you can find at channelirk.com and also at irktothedoryroom.com. I am on location. Try and guess where I am. Da 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 da. That's right, I'm on location. I am in South Melbourne in Victoria. I'm in the park opposite 142 Park Street in South Melbourne, which was, of course, the location for the Block Sky High on Channel 9 that I've spoken about in previous episodes. The auction was held on the 27th of July 2013. It is now the 21st of August 2013. And so all the contestants, of course, have gone home to their real lives and what they're doing past the block, who knows. But as I did a few episodes ago, the last time I was in Melbourne properly in October, November in 2012, where I went and saw, I went to the same location, basically, you know, the 2012 block location in Dorcas Street. Here I am. Now, at the moment, the weather is typical Melbourne weather. It was cloudy this morning, sun came out, cloudy again, and now the sun's came out, and the wind has dropped, fortunately. I'm staying in the Docklands area of Melbourne. It's a new part of Melbourne for me. And this part of Melbourne as well, South Melbourne, is a new part of Melbourne to me as well. Now, I'd known through watching the Block Sky High that there was a tram service nearby, and indeed the tram tracks are about one block. In fact, there's to my right, there's the block, I'm in the park, and then to my left are the tram tracks heading towards Melbourne. So it's a little bit of a strange neighbourhood in terms of there's a new building, which was an old building, the Block Sky High building. Immediately behind it, there's some houses that have seen some better days, probably dating from the early 1900s. There's concrete and brick monstrosities, probably dating from the 70s. But if you look into the distance, there's also modern multi-story apartments from basically the 90s and up to today. Now, the Block Sky High, for those of you who weren't aware, it formerly was a rundown motel, and I think while they might have exaggerated how rundown it was for the purposes of TV, if it was half as bad as what they showed on TV, you definitely wouldn't want to stay there. But over the coming 12 weeks, the contestants, I keep on wanting to say housemates because I'm in the middle of watching Big Brother Australia. I keep on wanting to say housemates. The contestants, there were 5 teams, and each team had a floor. And then after that, there were common areas that they worked on together. When I was walking down... As a tram goes past, as I was walking down from Clarendon Street, where I caught the number 112 tram from the centre of Melbourne, you actually don't see the building from every sort of angle, which you might expect. The way they were talking it up on the TV, you'd think that you'd be able to see it from, you know, from miles around. But it's only when you basically get, pun not intended here, a block away from the actual block location that you can actually see it. There's the ground floor and then 5 floors above it. It's only been not even a month away from the auction. When I went to the previous block premises in Dorcas Street, which, having a look on Google Maps, is actually pretty close to here. They're pretty much in the same neighbourhood as they were for the 2012 season. it's very much still in block mode here, where they've got all the advertising signs out, they've got the massive block banner out in memory of Beck's mother, Rosa, who died during the filming of the show due to breast cancer. It's very still in block mode, whereas around the corner in Dorcas Street, there's basically no sign. All the advertising was basically taken down by the stage time I'd arrived. Whereas you can go out the front and you can see the advertising hoardings as the wind springs up, so I have to change position. The advertising signs are still there, and you can see how they've advertised the premises. Each of the five floors is basically a self-contained apartment with some common areas, including the rooftop garden. And it's just interesting how different people have highlighted it. Of course, because it's a TV auction, there's lots of references to the TV show. Each couple are actually listed there, and you can also see their photos and whatnot. It's interesting to see, of course, that all of the houses sold, as you'd probably expect. All of the houses have their, you know, for sale signs there, and also the sold stickers, which of course happened. Now, the funny thing is, when it comes to the sold stickers that have been placed on it, I don't think they've actually moved the sold sign. I don't think it's been moved. I think this is its original location. But what they've done, they've placed the sold sticker over half of one of the contestants' head, Jared from the Maddie and Jared team from Sydney. They basically covered up half his head. Now, if you're a woman, you might think that that's a tragedy. You know, he's not a bad-looking guy, but it's rather strange how they've got all this space on the sign that, you know, you could use to put the sold sticker on, and they've gone over half the guy's head. Now, of course, if you have watched the show, you could appreciate the amount of work that's gone into making it what it is. Basically, they've taken a rundown hotel and turned it into five luxury self-contained apartments in the space of 2 weeks. Sorry, 12 weeks, I should say. Not 2 weeks, but 12 weeks. And it's an absolutely amazing achievement. It looks a lot smaller than what it does on TV, but it just goes to show what you can do when you have a super duper budget. You have many, many people working many, many hours of the day and night. Obviously, if it wasn't a TV construction thing, it would have taken probably a lot longer. But of course, this is the whole idea of the show, to do what would be pretty much impossible to do in an insane amount of time, and, you know, all the dramas that ensue within. And of course, this year, as I've mentioned on previous episodes, there were a lot of drama, some that happened anyway, and some that I'm sure were created by the show to have the tension up and that sort of thing. Now, when you look at the place and then you think that the winners of the show, spoiler alert coming up, the first floor was the winning floor. Now, when it comes to buildings such as this, you know, they're always talking about the penthouse. You know, the penthouse has got the views. The penthouse is the most luxurious. But no, the first floor one, in the hands of the South Australian cops, who I still can't tell the difference between the twins. Just when I thought that I'd be able to tell the difference between them, something happened. But when you consider that two female cops from South Australia, who basically have no tradie experience, no tradie background, no background in design or anything like that, have actually come up and won this thing. It's a spectacular achievement because most of the other teams had one, if not both, people had some sort of trade or some sort of construction experience or whatever. One of the teams, one of the guys was a plasterer, there was a bricklayer and another, a sign writer and another one. One of the people was a graphic designer. And so to have basically two unqualified women, for the lack of a better term, come out and win the thing, just goes to show that it's not necessarily just how you can build a brick wall or, you know, how you tile a place, but they were going for things like design, what's popular, knowing their market, who would use the space, and all of that sort of stuff. And a lot of it is actually how you project manage and how you have a vision for the place and how you might be working on a particular room in that particular week, but also you're trying to look ahead and to see how the how the build would be going into the future without actually being able to do anything about it. Now, in the probably 20 minutes that I've been here, it's just been amazing just to look at the amount of people who have gone past taking photos. Of course, it's still very recent in people's memories. And so, and I've done the same. I've taken a lot of photos as well. But it's just amazing just to be here, just to look at the building and to think about how hard it would have been for the contestants. And I dare say in, weeks to come, even when they take all the advertising and things down, it's a remarkable building. They've converted an old hotel into an 8-star energy efficient luxury apartment building, so that's absolutely great. So I'm going to move on from the block Sky High, and I'm going to be somewhere very special next here on Irk to the Diary Room, irktothediaryroom.com, where I'll tell you what I've been watching.
To those passengers with the camera, if you are going to take photographs, can you please turn your flash off? It's most important on the underground. Can you turn your flash off when you use the camera? And next time, if you're going to take a photograph, can you ensure that I'm smiling, please?
Welcome back to episode 20 of Irk to the Diary Room, coming to you on location again in Melbourne, Victoria. Now coming to you from St Kilda, which is a significant cultural area in Melbourne. Also reminds me in many ways of King's Cross in Sydney. But this one's for you, Albert. I'm outside Luna Park in Melbourne, and once again, it is closed. That's right, you heard me correctly. Outside Luna Park in Melbourne, and it is closed. Now, the reason I mention that is because when I last came here in late October, early November last year, I came to St Kilda for the day, and I came to Luna Park expecting it to be open, and it was closed. And so when I was in America earlier this year, when I was at Coney Island, it was in the middle of winter and I was expecting it to be open, and it also was closed. And now I'm here at Luna Park in mid-August, and once again I'm here during the week and it is closed because it is the middle of winter. But Luna Park here in Melbourne, it is a cultural icon here in Melbourne. The winter hours, by the way, are 11 a.m. till 6 p.m. Saturday and Sundays. They're open every day of the Victorian school holidays. From the 15th of July to the 15th of September, they are open Saturday and Sundays only, 11 a.m. till 6 p.m. for the Victorian school holidays from the 21st of September to the 13th of October. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And then on the 18th and 20th of September, they're open 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. also. So that is Luna Park in Melbourne. It again is closed, but they are undergoing some renovation. It says here Luna Park is open as usual. I'd like to refute that and say that, as usual, Luna Park in Melbourne is closed. And so you might be wondering why I'm talking about this on Irk to the Diary Room apart from my usual talk podcast, IrkPod. That is because IrkPod, at the moment, I am still bringing you episodes from my American trip earlier in the year, and I thought this was the best opportunity. I know Albert listens to this show as well, so I just thought that this would be the best opportunity to tell him that that Luna Park in Melbourne is closed, and not have to have him wait for months on IrkPod. But apart from that, being here at Luna Park in Melbourne, A, it reminds me I'm in Melbourne. You know, there's trams running around, everything like that, so I know I'm here. But one song that I've had in my head since arriving yesterday was a song that... it was a parody song done by the D-Generation, which was a comedy troupe on ABC TV back in the day. Some of the members went on to form Working Dog Productions and things like The Panel and whatnot, a group of Melbourne comedians. And one thing that they did was a parody song, and they called it something like Melbourne Clichés. And so what they did, they had a popular song, and if I remember, I'll put the video in the show notes and also play you the audio at the end of the episode if I remember. But what it was doing, it was basically singing about all the cliches of Melbourne, like the Bourke Street Mall, Melbourne Trams, Luna Park, the St Kilda Esplanade, all of those sort of Melbourne cliches. But it was a really, really funny song. But since I've been here in Melbourne, or not even 24 hours, I do have that particular song stuck in my head, which is funny because that would have been from 1991, 1992 when they did that. And I know there's some people out there who still think that The Late Show, which was on Saturday nights at 10 p.m. on the ABC, champagne sketch comedy. Yes, indeed it was.
CG and then to the tennis center, through the Bourke Street Mall and down the Block Arcade, caught the 96 tram to St Kilda Esplanade, saw the Westgate Bridge from the top of Flinders Street clocks, saw the Yu Yangs real clear. We've just run out of Melbourne cliches. We've just run out of Melbourne cliches. So we went on down along to the Victorian Tourist Bureau. Got heaps of ideas for places we've never even been to, like Sovereign Hill and Healesville Sanctuary, the Brighton Sea Baths, and some kiosks at the end of the pier. We went down to a place, I think it was Captain Cook's Cabin. We're not all that sure, but at least it rhymes with Moravan. Got no more Melbourne cliches.
But what am I watching now? Well, not literally right this minute, because I'm standing outside Luna Park in Melbourne, which is kilos. But what am I watching? Well, I was over at the Block, of course, the Block Sky High in South Melbourne, and I negotiated my way on the tram and walked to Luna Park in Melbourne, which is kilos. Which is a real shame, because it would be an interesting soundscape to listen to, especially with the old wooden roller coaster which dominates the skyline here. At the moment, I am watching the 2013 version of Big Brother Australia on Channel 9, which is pretty much typical of what Big Brother last year was on Channel 9. Very safe, very family friendly, very bland. We're about 3 weeks in, and the big twist that they were promoting in the lead up to it, you know what the big twist was? There's two houses. There's a poor house, they're calling it the halfway house, and there's a safe house. They've done that already. They have the nominated housemates going and living in the halfway house, and the halfway house has you know, very small beds. They're not allowed to feed themselves, they have to be fed by the safe housemates, blah 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 blah. Very boring, very predictable. They were promoting during last week, a big celebrity comes into the Big Brother house. A big celebrity comes in, and I'm like, yeah, sure, it's going to be like some third-rate person off The Voice or something, because it has to be a Channel 9 celebrity. Maybe it'll be Eddie Maguire, somebody like that. But as it turns out, it was an afternoon where all the guys and all the girls were getting themselves all prettied up, because they were told that they were going to be visited by a Hollywood celebrity. Now, I don't know what Hollywood celebrity would want to go into the Australian Big Brother house, but apparently that was the case. So all the girls are frocked up, all the guys have suited up, and then it turns out that the Hollywood celebrity was not a Hollywood celebrity at all. It was a rescue dog from basically the Queensland version of the RSPCA. And that they'd called the so-called rescue dog Mr. Clooney, after George Clooney. So there was all that build up, like, oh my god, there's going to be a Hollywood celebrity, the person's an Oscar winner, blah 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 blah, and it turned out to be a freaking dog. Now, apart from the fact that, you know, they've basically talked something up and not delivered again, and they've basically lied to us and the housemates, they did the whole let's have a rescue dog and let's have the housemates look after the rescue dog and then we'll give it to some family at the end of the show. They did that exact same thing last year. So when it comes down to original and new ideas, they are kilos. They are running on empty. They are certainly running on empty when it comes to new ideas. They have games back again. They used to have, when it was on Channel 10, they used to call it Friday Night Live, which was a series of games where they were basically performing various tasks to try and get rewards and whatnot. But they're now having that on Saturday nights, and they're calling it Big Brother Showdown. So they're doing that. And they've, oh my god, I can't believe they've done this. They've got Mike Goldman, who is the voiceover guy for Big Brother, and basically has been from the start, which is fair enough. They have, I've got to get out of this wind. Hopefully this is a little better. One of the problems about recording outside on location, they have, as I was saying, Mike Goldman, the voiceover guy for Big Brother, fair enough. They have one of last year's housemates, Michael, who they felt sorry for, and they've basically invited him into the studio. I don't know if he gets paid or not, to provide his insightful commentary. And then for some reason, they've decided that they needed another person to basically host the thing. And they've decided to grab Shelley Craft, who was one of the talking heads on the block Sky High. So she was also on, or one of the latest hosts of Australia's Funniest Home Videos. So she's obviously still under contract. She needed something to do. So they've said, hey, Shelley, what are you doing on a Saturday night? Come in and host this week. So I don't know, apart from she's probably got nothing else to do because she's still under contract. But sometimes happens with people that the network sign up. So they've got her hosting as well. But overall, it is a massive case of same old, Channel 9 can't come up with any ideas. Probably one of the few highlights that there have been so far in the first few weeks is the interaction that the voice of Big Brother does with some of the housemates, especially when it comes to things like nominations and all of that sort of stuff. But it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few weeks. Another thing that I have been watching over the last few weeks, there's a guy on TV called Anthony Bourdain. And I started seeing ads for things that he was doing through other shows that I was watching. And there was a series which really appealed to me, which was called The Layover. And it was basically him giving advice. What do you do if you are in a area in a big city and you've only got very limited time to see it? Like, you might be on a layover between connecting flights, for instance. What do you do? And so that to me looked very, very promising. And so I had a few episodes stored up, and it's on the TLC channel on Foxtel here in Australia on pay TV. And so I stored a few up, and then I started watching it, and I thought, oh, this is going to be cool. The first place that he was talking about was Singapore, and I'm heading to Singapore doing a stopover for a week on the way back from Japan and America in February next year. So I thought, oh yeah, this would be interesting to see what I'm in for. So I started watching, and there was a the whole thing is that, of course, he's extremely limited by time because of the whole premise of the show. You know, you might be there, say, up to 36 hours is the regular sort of time that he has on this show. And so he's trying to fit in as much as he can. Basically, as soon as he gets into the main city from the airport, he's often doing stuff. So I thought, yeah, this would be rather interesting. But I soon found out that the main thing about this show is that it's all about food and where you can go and get food. And I'm not much of a foodie. I'm a very simple man when it comes to food. I'm a very, very simple man indeed. So it quickly became apparent that it was all about food. I still enjoyed it because between all the eating, he was still doing stuff where he was, doing stuff apart from eating. But apart from that, it was somewhat frustrating because he was talking about he was talking about eating a lot, and I'd think that, you know, he was going on about, you know, food constantly. Like, you'd think he'd be eating about 7 times a day. And I'm just trying to go back to some of the tweets, because some of my tweets actually were very, very hilarious. I know at one stage, on the first episode I watched about Singapore, he was having a suki gaga because, for the purposes of continuity, he was needing to wear the same shirt for 30 hours. Now, of course, I wouldn't have thought that that would have been absolutely necessary to have one shirt that he'd be wearing for 30 hours. I thought, you know, he could buy several of the same blue shirt, and as need be, especially in a humid tropical place like Singapore, that he'd be able to, you know, change shirts. But no, he'd say, oh no, I have to wear this same shirt for the whole time. But that didn't necessarily happen in some of the other shows. An episode that I was watching from him in Miami, he wasn't worried about continuity then, because mid-episode he goes and gets a tattoo. which was very interesting. I know that a tattoo is not as obvious as a shirt, but I don't think anybody's necessarily worried that he's wearing a different shirt within a period of, you know, 24, 38 hours. I don't think they're necessarily worried about that. If you're into food and exotic food and, you know, food of different cultures and everything, well, obviously that season would be for you. Indeed, I was doing a whole series of tweets with the hashtag TheLayover on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at IrkPod. And I had a friend of mine point out that you do know that this guy's a TV chef / foodie, don't you? And, you know, I soon figured that out. There was another show that I was watching at the same time, also by Anthony Bourdain, and it was called No Reservations. Now, that is purely food. That is purely food. There's no hesitation. There's no surprises that they're talking about food in this particular one, where the other one is more travel. And it actually did indeed take me some time to figure out that TLC actually stands for travel, leisure and cuisine. I, you know, sort of figured out the travel and the leisure bit eventually, but it took me some time to figure out what the C was. But yeah, it took me a while to figure that out. If you're into travel, I wouldn't necessarily watch No Reservations. There is a little bit of travel in there, but not a lot. I've seen him in episodes in Japan and in America and in Asia mainly. But they have, you know, they've got a few episodes out there. What I tend to do now is that I series link things. Oh, we have some sirens. Ah, paramedics. Oh, here we go. I'm starting to come up to some of my layover tweets, which were very, very interesting. Where have I seen him in the layover? I saw him in Singapore, in Amsterdam, which was very interesting because I've been to Amsterdam, Singapore because I haven't been to Singapore. The Montreal one in Canada was interesting, Sean, because he told me some things about Montreal that I didn't realise, because it's like the French, or one of the French areas of Canada. And so that was cool. Amsterdam, as I said, was interesting. New York was an interesting one for me because I love New York. But apart from that, Tony is, or Anthony is from New York. It's hard to believe that some of the tweets I'm looking for were 19 days and 20 days ago. Okay, here we go. Watching the layover Singapore. That's handy because I'm going there on the way home from the US. And then there was one where I said, I haven't seen any steak yet. Uh-oh. I hope the whole episode isn't about food. Hashtag the layover. Hashtag you don't win friends with salad. Next one. So Singaporeans use tissue packets to reserve their seats in the food courts. That's a good safety tip. Thanks, Egon. So I was borrowing a line there from Ghostbusters. Of course, hashtag the layover. Now the American host has gone to his hotel to sleep and handed his camera to a local guide, hashtag the layover. Next one. The subway looks awesome and it isn't food. Reminds me of the Hong Kong, hashtag the layover. The way this guy is eating, he'll be 500 pounds by the time he gets back on the plane to leave Singapore 30 hours later, hashtag the layover. And then there was a tweet that I was mentioning where I mentioned about the continuity. He says he needs to wear the same shirt for continuity for 30 hours. Bring more than one shirt of the same design, hashtag the layover. Note to self, no need to shop for phone chargers and TV remotes in Singapore. Go to Thieves Market, not hashtag the layover. Next one. This guy is eating again. He must be up to meal 6 in 12 hours, hashtag the layover. Oh, now he's on a scooter heading off to eat again. Now he is at Gay Lang, Red Light District and unofficial food capital, hashtag the layover. Next one. Okay, you can eat food in Singapore. We get it. Meal 7, I think. You'd think he was a food blogger, hashtag the layover. With 20 hours done in Singapore, he is done with eating. Now he is shopping, but he'll be eating again soon, hashtag the layover. I spoke too soon. After sleeping, he is eating again while on the way to the airport, hashtag the layover. There's a slide at the airport. Wow, but he didn't eat at the airport. Wow. Hashtag the layover. Same host, different show, no reservations. I think he likes to eat. He is now in Sapporo, Japan. Looks nice. Hashtag no reservations. And then, of course, if you're on Twitter, by the way, you've probably seen the various public transport companies near you providing service information via Twitter, and there's a really good parody one which is called TLF Travel Alerts, which is supposed to be a parody of Transport for London. And one of their tweets that I tweeted while watching No Reservations was, to get reluctant trains to go into tunnels, we've made them pretend that they're spoons full of food entering a baby's mouth. It seems to work. Then I've gone back to watching No Reservations. He is in Sapporo for the food. Quell surprise. There's lots of skiing to be had. Hashtag No Reservations. And then a little bit later, I'm borrowing from The Simpsons here. Is he going to try fugu? Tasty fish, poison fish. Don't worry, map to hospital on back of menu. Hashtag no reservations. And then a little bit later, I've commented that he hasn't had any fugu yet. Local native man has translated Suki Lala about Japanese culture taking over his culture. Drives off in Japanese car. Hashtag no reservations. And what that was about, they were up in Sapporo and they were meeting up with what would basically be the Japanese version of an African, an American Native Indian or an Aboriginal Australian, for instance. And so they've got touristy things where they try and keep the culture alive and show the traditional parts of that part of Japan. And there's this one guy who apparently doesn't speak any English at all. There's another guy which is helping him translate, and then you've got the subtitles on the screen. So he was having a bit of a suki lala, you know, the Japanese are taking over our culture and everything like that, which is interesting, of course, because you're in Japan. But, and then at the end of that particular segment, he drives off in a Japanese car, so that was very interesting. And at the end of that episode, with no fugu eaten, the credits roll and I add Sapporo to a possible visit list. And then we go on to the next time that I watch those particular shows. Oh, another TLF travel alerts tweet, which I found funny around about the same time. Reports from the Victoria line of two people having a loud, friendly conversation. We have closed the line. There's that word, closed again. Closed the line, pending further investigations. Oh, that's another thing that they've done again in Big Brother this year. They have stupid Surly, the stupid talking fish. Boring. Oh, and another thing, because I'm just reading through these tweets and it's just reminded me. Once again, there's no live streaming of the Big Brother house. They're promoting that you can see things live into the house. Like things like photo galleries and video highlights, but it's no live streaming. Here we go again. Time for some of hashtag the layover before bed. Tony is going to New York, his hometown. I am guessing he will eat at some point. Transit snob doesn't want to get anything but a taxi from the airport. $16 in a van versus $50+ in a taxi. The shared van was okay, hashtag the layover. I was commenting about getting a shared van or a taxi from JFK. There's a vegetarian in the most expensive hamburger joint in the New York City. All he can eat is a grilled cheese sandwich, but he does eat fish. Another guy says that there's no sushi places in New York City. The host says that the sushi is better in New York City than Tokyo, hashtag the layover. Creepy old guy talks about being touched on the subway. He says he doesn't like to be touched unexpectedly. Another episode of hashtag the layover. Now Tony is in Montreal. How long before someone says oot in a boot? Montreal street signs are in French. La la. The layover. Minus 40 in Montreal in winter. I didn't think it was that far north. I know Winnipeg is brutal in winter. Of course, talking about Winnipeg. Hashtag the layover guy is eating again. Ooh, finally a steak after 2.5 episodes. It took 31 minutes for someone to say, eh? Still time for an boot, the layover. Another episode of hashtag the layover. The electronic program guide says that the show is about Manila. It is actually about Miami. That's better for me considering my trip. In Singapore, Hisuki Rara is about wearing the same shirt for continuity. In Miami, he gets a tattoo. Make up your mind, man. Hashtag the Laeva. This episode of the Laeva in Miami is less about the food than other episodes. This pleases me. And then I see another episode from London. Moving from Miami to London, Wayne and Garth thinks that Piccadilly Circus is a pretty shitty circus. Hashtag the Laeva. So you never know what cultural references I'm going to make when I tweet. Yes, that's what I'll be doing the next time I go to London, getting custom-made shoes made. And of all the things you can do, hashtag the Laeva. I was thinking, when is he going to go onto the tube? And then he goes onto the tube. Now, this is a quote of the day from the same show. Always stand for pregnant ladies, regardless of if you put the bun in the oven or not. That's cool. After taking freight cab rides in London, he has a Suki Lala that cab rides are expensive. Thank you, hashtag Captain Obvious, hashtag the Laeva. After having a Suki Lala about expensive cab rides in London, he goes for another expensive cab ride in London, hashtag the Laeva. Yet again, he is in a cab in London despite his earlier Suki Lala about expensive cab fares, hashtag the Laeva. And then we move to an episode in Rome. A woman in Rome just asked Tony if he was... A woman in Rome just asked Tony, while he was on a tram, if he was Gordon Ramsay. Hashtag Rofflecopter, hashtag the Laeva. And then they... What they also do during this show, they talk to some of the locals, and some of the locals give them tips as well. And this really cool, really hot woman with a cool Italian accent, she says this.
Not so smiley about the French, or too much smiley about the Americans.
But her voice was a lot better than that. Don't even know what accent that was. If the Italian lady of the last tweet has her own TV show, I'd watch it. Hashtag ooh la la, hashtag ring-a-ding-ding, hashtag the Laeva. And I took a screenshot of what she looked like. She was pretty hot. And then there's another woman who's talking about a secret of Rome when the sun rises. And I've said, that's why it's a secret, because no one knows what it is. Hashtag Captain Obvious, hashtag the Laeva. And then he goes to Amsterdam. The Laeva is in Amsterdam. Don't look in the windows or go to the cafes. And then there's a segment there where he's actually in one of the cafes, but he says that it's network policy for him not to consume any drugs, which may be illegal in the states that he's being shown in, even if it is legal where he happens to be. Where he happens to be. And of course, I had the feeling at the time that that he would, even though they wouldn't necessarily show it. And so I went back and I was watching some more episodes of Dirty Jobs, and they had a really cool episode that was set in a bowling alley, and they were showing how the lanes get cleaned and how the pins are reset and what you've got to do to replace the parts in the machine that sets the pins, and what they actually did to show you the process of how a bowling pin gets set up and then knocked over and then get reset up again. They actually put a camera inside one of the bowling pins, which I thought was rather cool. Albert actually said to tell me that for the road nerds, Montreal duplicates all road signs. The first one is in French, and the second one is English, 50 metres behind the first. So that was an interesting tip. And so, Dirty Jobs. I'm being very selective now in what episodes I actually watch. I'm just watching the ones of interest to me now. I think I've watched all the episodes that I have of the Laeva. I'm not sure if there's going to be any further episodes, as I almost get swiped by a pigeon. But yeah, that's a pretty interesting show. Even though he concentrates on food, I'm going to have to look out for some more of the purely travel shows on the TLC network. It's not one of the networks that I usually watch. As I mentioned earlier, I'm watching the current season of Big Brother Australia, but I'm also watching the current season of Australia's Next Top Model, which I think I mentioned in the last episode. It's about the midway point of the competition now. There was actually a bit of a drama a couple of episodes ago where the models were out in the central west of New South Wales, and they were doing one of their challenges, and one of the contestants got really angry and strangled another contestant. Now, of course, there was a lot of talk about that on social media. Some people, like me, were saying that that's purely unacceptable and that the show did the right thing and disqualified the contestant, blah, blah, blah. Others were of the opinion that it was only a play fight and it should have been allowed to continue. But and then other people were saying, oh, there was a camera crew there, so they were busy filming it. Why didn't anybody stop it? And it did take a little bit of time to stop. But the funny thing was, you could actually see what happened, you know, because they have preview of the next episode, so you saw a little bit of what happened. But Channel 9 on A Current Affair had a story about it. I haven't seen the story about it, but they talk about it, because of course this particular show was on Fox 8, on Foxtel, on pay TV. So yeah, it's an interesting series, but I don't know. Some of these girls are like really awkward. Some of them are like 15, 16, 17, 18. They haven't had a lot of life experience. They're all in the giggly teenage girl sort of stage. And trying to get some girls who are obviously sexually inexperienced and otherwise, you know, they're in that awkward sort of stage, trying to get them to be sexy as models need to be isn't necessarily, you know, good viewing. It's sometimes a little bit awkward. Sometimes a little bit awkward indeed. So they're the main things that I've been watching. Of course, we started the episode over at the Block Sky High. We talked about Big Brother. We talked about The Layover. We talked about No Reservations. We talked briefly about The Late Show. And we mentioned that Luna Park in Melbourne is closed. And actually, while I've been recording, I've been looking at Twitter at the same time, and Albert actually got back to me and he says, it seems like Luna Park Melbourne, using their Twitter handle, has it in for you. So just the way it is, just the time that I come down, they aren't necessarily open every day like Luna Park is in Sydney. But I think that's pretty much it. So I will leave you here. I will say to Danny that I'm in St Kilda, and I will talk to you next time, probably in about a month's time, where I talk about what's going on in relation to TV, pop culture, entertainment, and a lot more. I'm Eric. Thanks for listening from outside the closed Luna Park in Melbourne. I'm Eric. Thanks for listening. You can leave comments on the show notes at erictothediaryroom.com. This is episode 20. Hope you're enjoying it. Good night, interweb.